Okay, welcome everybody to the second talk of the session. We are very happy to have Yijin Zhu from X the Moonshot Factory with us, and he is telling us about extracting universal data of critical quantum spin chains from periodic uniform matrix product states. Please go ahead, Yijin.
Okay, sure. So thanks, Stephen. Thanks to organizers for giving me the opportunity to talk here. So today I'm going to talk about extracting the universal data of critical quantum spin chains from periodic uniform measure product states. Well, with such a long title, I need to explain what all these things means. So first, first critical quantum spin chain. So it is a quantum spin chain at the second order phase transition or higher order. And we know that this type of second order phase transition have the phenomena called universality, and this universal data which characterize the universality class that determines all the long distance properties of this critical quantum spin chain. And this periodic uniform measure product state is just this one. It's just this tensor network, and I hope it's clear in this conference. So this conference has name like from tensor networks, from simulations to holography. I'm going to talk about simulations, but I'm also going to talk about holography. There's a striking connection between holographic conjecture and simulations in my talk. So as you will see later. So let me start with the overview of what we can do. So our task is to extract universal data. In 1+1 dimensions, this universal data characterize the so-called conformal field theory that emerge at the long distance of a critical quantum spin chain. And so the following 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 is what we can extract. Just let me explain like what all these things means for those familiar with CFT. Maybe it sounds silly, but yeah, for those who do not understand what is the CFT or who do not have known CFT before, let me just introduce you one by one. So CFT first has some operators, and some operators are called primary operators, and they have a scaling dimension called delta and a conformal spin called S. And these scaling operators are organized according to conformal towers. It has a tower structure, and we will be more clear later. We can extract the central charge of the CFT and OP coefficient of the CFT. If there is any emergent symmetry, we can try to see if there are really emergent symmetries. We can extract the multipartite entanglement properties of the CFT, which is very hard to compute from a field theory perspective. And this is where we can make connection with holography. Let's just start with the left-hand side, which is the critical quantum spin chain. And of course, this is our starting point. We want to infer from the left-hand side to the right-hand side. The critical quantum spin chain is just a sum of local term. For example, the ICE model has a Pauli X, XX interaction, and Pauli Z magnetic field term. This is gapless, and it is described by the Ising CFT in the small dynamic limit. What we can do is we can extract all these informations from this Hamiltonian. The specific method that we use to extract the universal data is to make use of the low energy eigenstates. So here is a picture of the low energy eigenstates. So the horizontal line is the momentum, and the vertical line is the energies. And you see that the ground state, we normalize the energy to zero, and they are first excited state, the second excited state, and so on and so forth. So this could be obtained by exact organization or periodic uniform measure product states, as I will talk about later. Okay. So if you do not remember anything after this talk, this is what you should remember. It's the take-home message that if you diagonalize the low-energy spectrum of the lattice Hamiltonian, which is the right-hand side, there's really a similarity between the left-hand side and the right-hand side, where the left-hand side, is the exact scaling operator spectrum of the CFT, which you can see it's parameterized by the scaling dimension and the conformal spin of the scaling operators. And yeah, the left and right are almost the same. That makes the path of extracting the conformal data from the quantum critical spin chain. And we should note that larger size make better approximations. So this is a lattice result of n equal to 20 spins, which is sufficiently good to see that they are very similar. But yeah, still large system size would make a better approximation, and that is also a key point in this talk. Okay. Okay, so the specific work that we try to connect left with right is not only an identification of the points to each other by comparing the spectrum, but also we can try to see the connection of the eigenstates. Just let me be more specific. So on the CFT side, we have something called Virasoro generators that connects states within each conformal tower. And each conformal tower is on the right-hand side is with the same color, for example, the green color. And on the lattice-hand side, we can construct lattice operators that acts the same way as the right-hand side. So we can construct the lattice operators that are the same thing as the right-hand side. And from this, we can extract all the primary operators. We can see which are the primary operators and what are the conformal towers, and it turns out that it will also give you the central charge. I will be more precise later. So the second thing that we can extract is the OP coefficient. And to extract the OP coefficient, what we need is also an action from one state to another state. In a CFT or in a lattice, and this type of operators would connect one conformal tower to another conformal tower. As you can see that in this icing CFT example, it connects the green dots to the orange dots, which belong to different conformal towers. And the point is that on the lattice side, we can extract the operator, or we can obtain the operators that act in the low energy spectrum the same way as the CFT. So whatever arrows that you see on the right hand side would be the you would find a corresponding operator that does the same thing on the left hand side. And from this, we can read off the OP coefficient, and we can also see if there is any emergent symmetry generators, such as Kakamudi. So this J would mean Kakamudi, and this G would mean super conformal. If you don't know anything, that's fine. Okay. As I mentioned before, we need to achieve larger system size to make better approximations, and exact diagonalization wouldn't get you too much. And this is where tensor network could jump in. So we use the periodic uniform metric product state, and also the excitation answers to capture the excited states. And the numerical cost is proportional to the system size and the bound dimension, which means the bound dimension of this bound, bound dimension to the fifth power. I will not go into details of how the algorithm is implemented, but just give you a hint of how long it will take. So for 64 spins, it just take 5 minutes. Use bound dimension 24, takes 5 minutes to extract the conformal data, all the conformal data of the icing model. And for larger system size like 256, it takes longer, like 8 hours, which is also affordable. But as I will tell you later, that our method is very, very accurate. It's far more accurate than almost any method in the market. So this time is worth it. Okay. So finally, this is where we make connection with holography, that we can compute the entanglement properties of CFTs. So specifically, the holographic conjecture that we will be interested in is the tripartite entanglement entropy called entanglement purification. So specifically, we can compute this entanglement purification in a quantum spin chain and try to see if they match the holographic conjectures. Okay, so this is just an overview of the result. So I will be specific in the following slides. So first, let me start with a more detailed introduction to conformal field theory. So a conformal field theory is completely determined by the conformal data. So a conformal data are composed of three parts, primary operators with scaling dimensions, conformal spins, and OPE coefficients, and the central charge. So what does all this data mean? Okay, let's see. If we have, if you look at the spectrum of the Ising CFT, you see really a tower structure, and in the case of the Ising CFT, you have three towers, and each tower and they are named identity sigma and epsilon, and associated with each primary state, there is a tower building from the bottom of this primary state, which are labeled in the same color. The epsilon has scaling dimension one, and the sigma has scaling dimension one eighth, and the identity has scaling dimension zero in the Ising model. It turns out that this data, this scaling dimension conformal spin data, completely determines the two-point correlation functions of the CFT. To determine the three-point correlation functions, you need the OP coefficient. And what the OP coefficient do is that it will fuse two operators to a linear combination of the operators. And this will reduce all three-point functions or higher-point correlation functions to two-point correlation functions. And as I mentioned, two-point correlation functions is already determined by the conformal spins and scaling dimensions. So with the OP coefficient, you can already determine the three-point correlation and higher-point correlation functions. But it turns out that this central charge will also come into this expansion because this is what I show here is a truncated one, and there are other terms which involves higher descendants, and this is where the central charge would appear. For the Ising model, the central charge is 1/2, and the only non-trivial OP coefficient, non-trivial meaning does not involve the identity operator, is the sigma epsilon, which is 1/2. Okay, so this is to the bottom. This part is what we want to extract from the Ising model. So just let me remind you that the input is just the Ising model Hamiltonian, which is minus XX minus Z. And this is the whole bunch of information that we want to extract from this Hamiltonian. Okay, as I mentioned, I will use the Lorentz eigenstates of this lattice model. And the key observation is that this lattice eigenstates show the same tower structure as the CFT, and this is actually already shown like in 1984 by Cardi, Blot, Nightingale, Affleck. So it says that the energies is related linearly to the scaling dimensions, and the momentum is related also linearly to the conformal spin. And that is why the left-hand side is so close to the right-hand side. And the reason that they are different is that on the lattice side, there is a finite set correction, which is dominated by this term. And X is larger than one, so that at larger and larger system size, this term could always be neglected. So, and this term is non-universal, that you cannot really know it a priori. So that is That is why we need larger and larger system size to make better and better approximations. Okay, and so Cardi derives this relation from the a very well known fact in CFT, which is called operator state correspondence. It says that the spectrum of the CFT states is the spectrum of the CFT operators. So I will interchangeably use the word CFT operators and CFT states and scaling dimensions of some operators and scaling dimensions of some states. So we just need to distinguish from them. So this is also a spectrum of CFT states, and this is and such that they can be made comparison with the lattice states. But if you just look at this formula, you see this energy spectrum and momentum spectrum, and you can read off the scaling dimension and conform spin, no problem. But you don't really know which are the primary states because the primary state actually need a tower structure. You can see the tower structure here, but you don't know whether there's some tower structure up. So for example, you don't know whether this state will be a new primary state that will give you another conformal tower up. So in general, you do not know which are the primary states. And as I mentioned before, the primary state is defined by the real sorrow generators. So this is our work on the lattice real sorrow generators. Let us look at the right-hand side. So these LNs and L bar Ns, this represents the real sorrow generators in the CFT, and these real sorrow generators connect the states within the same conformal tower. So this HN is just a linear combination of it. And in CFT, we can prove that this operator is nothing but the Fourier mode of the Hamiltonian. Let me show you some action of these real sorrow generators. So for example, if you start with the identity state, which is the primary state, and you act with H minus two, and you see that it will go to a descendant state of identity, and it's called a T state, which is a stress tensor state, and this state has scaling dimension two regardless of which CFT you are. So this T state is always there. And the other arrows, H1 and H-1, and of course, this will connect states also within the same conformal towers. And as I just show, and as I show you, this connects the states within the yellow conformal tower. And it will also, it will also connect states within the green conformal towers, but that, and H1, H minus one, what it will do, it will raise the scaling dimension by one or lower the scaling dimension by one, and it will increase the conformal spin by one. And H1, what it will do is that it will change the conformal spin by minus one and increase or decrease the scaling dimension by one. And of course, this H minus two would increase the scaling dimension by two, or decrease the scaling dimension by two, and also increase the conformal spin by two. But you just cannot decrease the scaling dimension by two. So what that means is that this identity state is a primary state because you cannot lower the scaling dimensions by the real sorrow generators. And as a contrast, this state, this orange state, is not a primary state because you can use the real sorrow generators to lower it and also to lower it to the primary state here. So in the end of this lowering process, you can identify all the conformal primary states. And our key point is that on the lattice, we can use the same operators to achieve these arrows. And the operator is very easy to guess. That is given from the right-hand side, you can guess the left-hand side. So on the lattice, this Hamiltonian becomes the lattice Hamiltonian, and this Fourier components become the Fourier components, and this integration becomes a sum. And so we can just construct this lattice operators which is the Fourier mode of the lattice Hamiltonian, and we can check whether this operator does the same thing as the right-hand side. And we find that really it does. So it connects states within a conformal tower around the lattice. And from this, we can, from these arrows and also other arrows, which I didn't draw, we can try to identify the primary state and all the conformal towers. Okay, just let me show you a result that combined with the periodic uniform magic product state technique. Okay, so at n equal to 64 of the Eisenstein model, I can use the MPS techniques to diagonalize the Lorentz spectrum, and you can see I can get like 100 excited states, which is far beyond the reach of DMRG. And you can compare it with the Eisenstein CFT, and you see that they look really like the same, except that here, there is some difference from the left-hand side to the right-hand side. But the finite size corrections would go up as you have larger scaling dimensions, so that is normal at finite size. So at finite size, you always have a level that you don't match, and the method and the point is how much you can go up to match the CFT spectrum. And we can see that the lower part completely match the Eisenstein CFT result, and also all the conformal towers identifications are correct. So each green dots are green dots, and the orange dots are orange dots, and you cannot find any primary state up. So that means that these three states are the only primary states that is present in the Eisenstein CFT. So just to give you a hint of how accurate this process could be, so we can extract the scaling dimensions and also the central charge, which is related to the stress tensor state I mentioned before. And on the right-hand panel, you can see how we extrapolate the finite size data to the small dynamic limit. So so the horizontal axis is 1 over the system size square, and vertical axis is the extracted quantities, which is the central charge and the scaling dimensions. And you can see that it perfectly gives you the theoretical predictions. On the left panel, we show how accurate we can get from this. And the larger system size that we use is like 220 and 56, 256. And this is just to be compared with other method in tensor networks. So we are all tensor network people, so we should admit that tensor network is the best method for 1D quantum system. And our pumps method is actually outperforms all this tensor network method. Even like within the tensor network category, this is the best. You see that either the finite entanglement scaling or tensor renormalization group, tensor network renormalization, they have like 3-digit accuracy or 3 to 4-digit accuracy. And our method is can achieve up to 6 or 7 digit of accuracy for the Eisenstein model. And of course, Eisenstein model doesn't make me a hero, right? Eisenstein model is very easy and people understand it very well. What I will do next is I will show you a more challenging model, which is Eisenstein model plus a next to nearest neighbor interaction. And it has been shown by O'Brien Friendly that this model will be described by the tricritical Eisenstein CFT at some tricritical point, which is lambda star equals to 0.428. And this is the spectrum, the spectrum of this quantum critical spin chain at the tricritical point. And you see that when you use the real Sorrow generators to identify the primary states, you see that there is a primary state here. And this is also the CFT prediction, the theoretical prediction, where in the CFT you should find here at scaling dimension 3, there is a primary operator, and it is. It just shows that our method works very well even when identifying a primary operator that high. And we can also extract all the conformal data as before. And these are the exact numbers of the primary states of scaling dimensions of primary state and the central charge. And these are our numerical result. And we see that even with a harder model, we can achieve like 3 to 4 digits of accuracy. And remember that given that this critical point is also provided with only 3 digits of accuracy. So our error is almost comparable with the error in the critical point, and that is well shows that our method is a very good method, it's a very accurate method to extract the conformal data. Okay, so from here we see that there is a tricritical point which described by the tricritical Ising CFT, and also there is an Ising point which is described by the Ising CFT. So what happens in between? So in between, it has been shown that this point are still described by the Ising CFT in the long distance limit. And what this means is actually that you can observe a renormalization group flow from the tricritical Ising CFT to the Ising CFT. And this is what we can also do on the lattice. So if you choose lambda to be in the middle of zero and lambda star and close to lambda star, which we choose lambda equal to 0.4, and at small system size, if you look at the spectrum and you try to identify all the primary states, you see that this looks so much like the tricritical Ising. And this is no surprise because at small system size, you should see the effect of the UV CFT in the RG flow. And if you have larger system size, so you flow further in the language of RG flow, you flow closer to the Ising model. So what that means is that the spectrum would look like more like the Ising CFT. And indeed, if you try to diagonalize n equal to 256 using the periodic uniform matching product state method, you can see that you can identify 3 at primary state and low lying spectrum just like the and you can see that this figure looks so much like the Ising CFT. And you may wonder that what happens when you continuously change the system size from 32 to 256, and of course this is in the essence of the RG flow, and you can observe the RG flow of these states, and this is what we observed. So we choose a lambda. So let me repeat the Hamiltonian, which is the tricritical Ising Hamiltonian plus a perturbation, a small perturbation, which is amounts to the deviation of the lambda to the actual tricritical point. And on the field theory side, this is described by the CFT perturbed with the relevant perturbation, epsilon prime. This epsilon prime has scaling dimension 1.2, which is a relevant operator. And the effect of this relevant operator is to push the CFT to flow from the tricritical Ising CFT to the Ising CFT. And we can diagonalize the spectrum of the left hand side and try to see how the spectrum change with the system size. And this is what we obtain. We see that this sigma state will flow to the sigma state in the Ising case, and the epsilon case, epsilon flow to epsilon, and epsilon prime flows to TT bar in the Ising case. We summarize this as the table. And this table is actually already conjectured in 1992 by a field theory speculation. And importantly, the spectral RG flow of this sigma operator can be quantitatively computed by an integral of field theory. And we can try to see that whether this line would match the theoretical computation, and indeed we find that they match. And this shows that our method can not only extract the conformal data at the fixed point, but also try to explore the renormalization group flow between different CFTs. Okay, at this point, I only deal with the spectrum. So as you see, I only deal with the spectrum, which amounts to the scaling dimensions and conformal spins. I haven't dealt with the OP coefficient. And in order to extract the OP coefficient, we need another tool, which is the lattice primary operators. Okay, so what a primary operator would do in a CFT is that it will connect states within different conformal towers. So for example, in the Ising CFT, if you have the sigma operator, it will send the epsilon tower to the sigma tower. For example, if you add it on the epsilon state, it will send it to this state, to this state, to this state, to this state, and to this orange state, and to almost to many orange states. And this is dominated by the operator product extension. So sigma and epsilon fields would give you sigma. And importantly, you can extract the central charge from this process. So you act with the sigma operator on the epsilon state, and you can get back to the sigma state with an amplitude that is proportional to the OP coefficient. We want to do the same thing on the lattice. So on the lattice, we can also define the Fourier mode. We can define the Fourier mode of a lattice operator, just as the Fourier mode of the CFT on the right-hand side. And we can choose this O to be the sigma x. Let me make a guess, O equal to sigma x. And we can try to see what this sigma x will do on this lattice eigenstate. And we see exactly the same errors. It will map the epsilon state to this state, to this state, to this state, and to other state on the right-hand side. So that makes us to guess that this X operator corresponding to the sigma operators in the CFT. And of course, that is indeed true, that people know this very long ago. And we can extract the OP coefficient from this overlap also. But this depends on the specific knowledge of the Ising model. If you don't know anything, if I just give you a random gapless, some random gapless model, and you don't know anything about that CFT, you don't know anything about this lattice model, you cannot really know which operators would correspond to which operators. Can we find the correspondence in general? And the answer is yes. And this is our innovation. This is our work. So we use a variational approach to identify lattice operators with the CFT operators. So this O is a lattice operator, and we want to identify the CFT operators, which can be expressed as a linear combination of CFT scaling operators. And we want to find the coefficient A alpha such that the left-hand side acting on lattice eigenstate equal to the right-hand side acting on CFT states. And this turns out to be just a linear least square optimization procedure. And by completing this procedure, we can get all the coefficients in this expansion. And of course, this expansion is infinite, and we need to truncate for numerical purpose. So any expansion here, shown here, is a truncated expansion. There are also higher order corrections. But you can show that the larger the scaling dimension, the less important this term will be. So it is a natural choice to sort this operator in ascending scaling dimension order. And this is what we do here. And you can see that, for example, the X operator not only has some component sigma, but it also have some descendant of sigma, which is the derivative descendant of sigma. The other operators would correspond to the linear combination of identity state, T state, epsilon state, and the descendant states. I will not go into detail about these operators. What I will pay focus to this, like the lattice operator that I will focus on is two operators. One is X, and one is a two-site operator, XZ plus ZX. Okay, so just from the optimization procedure, we get this X equal to some linear combination of sigma and partial tau square sigma. And XZ plus ZX is also some linear combination of sigma and partial tau square sigma. And if you use X to extract OP coefficient, you insert X to here, and to try to extract the OP coefficient sigma, sigma, epsilon, what you find is the red curve. And yeah, this rise curve is great. It decays at 1/n², and it goes to zero. So the error with the CFT, error of the CFT goes to zero as n equal to infinity. But this is not too fast. Like this is 1/n². We can actually do better because this 1/n² correction is actually caused by this term in the X operator. So this X operator is not completely the sigma CFT operator, but it has a derivative descendant at level 2. And this is what caused the 1/n² convergence. And what if we want to make the convergence faster to make even more accurate CFT conformal data OP coefficient? What we can do is we can try a linear combination of X and XZ plus ZX such that this term cancels. And this is exactly what I show here. So you can find a linear combination of X and XZ plus X such that this term cancels. As such that the correction term is at level 4, is higher descendants. And with that, you can try to compute the OP coefficient from this new operator and you see a faster convergence. And actually this faster convergence is 1/n⁴. And even at system size, which is 20, roughly here, 20, you can see that the OP coefficient, the error of OP coefficient is already very small, which is 10⁻c. And here we just reached the numerical precision. So that is how we can extract not only OP coefficient, but very accurate OP coefficients from the identification of the lattice operators and CFT operators. So it seems that I have 10 to 13 minutes left. I will just show you another example, which is the OP coefficient of the tricolicalizing CFT. There are 6 primary operators, so there are a bunch of many OP coefficients, and we can identify the lattice operators that correspond to each of these, including sigma, sigma prime, epsilon, epsilon prime, epsilon prime prime, and this is a very very tedious work following the procedure that I prescribed, but in the end we get all the new OP coefficients roughly correct, with this one most prominent error, but others are almost very accurate within 2 or 3 digits or 4 digits of accuracy. It is very impressive that this method is general, is systematic, that does not depend on any knowledge of your lattice model. So you can just go use the Pumps method or use exact diagonalization to get the low energy eigenstates and use the variational method to determine all the lattice operators that correspond to CFT operators. And then you can try to find all the OP coefficients, given that they are finite many, sure. That shows that this method is a very powerful method. And I don't think that there are other methods that can easily achieve this. So this completes our extraction of conformal data up to the OP coefficients. And I will also show you an example of the extended symmetry, how to extract the emergent symmetries from the lattice model, which is related to the extraction of OP coefficient. So it is well known that in the tricolicalizing CFT, there is an extended symmetry called superconformal symmetry. So what a superconformal symmetry is that it's a supersymmetry combined with conformal symmetry. Okay, if you don't know anything about supersymmetry, you must have heard that supersymmetry relates fermions and bosons. So here's a spectrum of the tricolicalizing CFT, and I also include the fermion excitations, which can be achieved by antiparabolic boundary conditions. I will not go into details of these boundary conditions, but I will just show you the result of the combination of the bosonic states and the fermionic states. And you see that these bosonic states and the bosonic state epsilon and fermionic states, they are related by the superconformal generators, just as a primary state and descendant state is related by the real Sorrow generators. And people proposed the super real Sorrow algebra that this generator would satisfy. And indeed, in the triglycerizing CFT, if you also include these super real Sorrow generators that would relate primary state to primary state, you find that there are only two super real Sorrow primary state in the end, which is identity and epsilon. And the rest of the real Sorrow primary state can be obtained by acting the super real Sorrow generators on these super real Sorrow states. These real Sorrow generators are not mysterious. They are the Fourier mode of the firm running stress sensor, which is analogous to the real Sorrow generator that is a Fourier mode of the Hamiltonian. And in this talk, I will focus on the new V-Schwarz sector, which means that this index ranging from half integers. You can also check the integer case. The integer case also work. And the question is that can we find the lattice operator that does the same thing as the CFT side? And the answer is surprisingly simple. So here I give you the lattice spectrum, which also includes the firm running excitations. And what you need to do to find the lattice super real Sorrow generators is that you first find the lattice operator TF, which can be achieved variationally, as I mentioned. Then you take the Fourier mode and you are done. we can numerically check this lattice real Sorrow generator, super real Sorrow generators will do the same as their CFT counterpart. One indication of that they are doing the right thing is that you can extract the central charge also from the matrix element from the identity to the TF state. Just let me remind you that there's a central charge in this algebra of the super real Sorrow generators as in the real Sorrow generators. So the central charge that is extracted from the super real Sorrow algebra and the real Sorrow algebra should be the same thing. What we numerically check, that we check that our lattice super real Sorrow generators can correspond to some central charge, and this central charge is exactly the same, roughly exactly the same as the real Sorrow generators. So which is 0.7, the correct central charge. And this is strong indication that this lattice super real Sorrow generator is doing the right thing. And if you have any extended symmetry, like W symmetry or Kac-Moody symmetry or any extended symmetry, you can use the same method. If you suspect that a lattice model would have this emergent supersymmetry, emergent symmetry, you can use this method to test it. I will make my last point about multi-partite entanglement measures in a CFT. This is kind of detached from the previous slides, in this slide, I will only make use of the ground state. Why this multi-partite entanglement is interesting? The reason is that people are interested in entanglement properties of CFT in general, and this is also very interesting in holography because you can try to reconstruct the bulk from the entanglement properties of the boundary. For the bipartite entanglement, you almost just have one measure, which is the entanglement entropy. This quantity in CFT is well studied in literature, which is Alhozi, Larsen, Wilczek 1984, and Calabrese-Cardi, the most famous one, and also the relation to holography is made by Yutaganagi. And these are exact results. All these are exact results. This makes us to speculate that whether there are other entanglement properties that you can find a holographic dual. But to go beyond bipartite entanglement, it is not very easy because multipartite entanglement measures are very diverse. There are many, many multipartite entanglement measures, and they are less studied. And in this talk, I will focus on one of these measures, which is called entanglement purification. And okay, so how does it define? We first divide our system into three regions, A, B, C. And of course, when you look at the subsystem AB, you see a mixed state. So the entanglement purification is defined as the minimum entanglement between ACL and BCR purification of this form. So the CLCR does not mean a division of the original C, but it means that it means arbitrary purification with two subsystems. So the entanglement of purification is the minimum of all this entanglement, and this has a very profound consequence, profound meaning in the quantum information community. So this, which is put forward by these people, and our talk will focus on a derived quantity from this entanglement purification, which is the two times entanglement purification minus the mutual information between A and B. And this gives you a quantity G. Why do we make this subtraction? The reason is that roughly speaking, when you subtract this bipartite entanglement entropy, the whole G would only measures how much genuine tripartite entanglement there are. So G would measure how much entanglement cannot be factored pairwise. Entanglement pairs between AB, the entanglement pairs between BC, and the entanglement pairs between CA. So this can be put in more rigorous form. And with that rigorous form, we can show that for gap symmetric system, we must have G equal to zero because, as you might know, that a gap system has no genuine tripartite entanglement. After coarse graining, all the entanglement become bipartite. So that is why we put forward this G, and our task is to see what is G for CFT. Holography will tell you that this entanglement purification is due to some geometric quantity. Okay, I should have drawn a picture here, but for those who know that, you know that it is the entanglement wedge cross section in the holography, and it is a pure geometric quantity that is related only to the central charge. And if you make the proper subtraction of the mutual information, you get this G equal to C over 3 log 2, and this is the holographic prediction. Okay. On the lattice, we can do the same thing. On the lattice, we can also compute this G because on the lattice we have a periodic uniform metric product state, and we can take the reduced density matrix and numerically compute the entanglement of purification and numerically subtract this mutual information so that we can numerically get this number G, and we show that this number G is universal, that only depends on the CFT. It does not depend on the lattice details. And it turns out that on the lattice, the computed G is this number that is not in accordance with the holographic predictions. Well, this is kind of not very surprised because you cannot say that the Ising CFT is a holographic CFT. You can say that the free Boson CFT is a holographic CFT. They are very non-holographic, so there are no holographic corrections to this number. So you should not really expect that this G equal to that. But still, the difference between this G and this C over 3 log 2 would constitute a quantitative measure of how non-holographic the CFT is. So people always say that holographic safety is large N, is larger single charge, is strong interaction whatsoever, but they are qualitative. This entanglement purification thing is really a measure of how non-holographic a CFT is. So, and we can compute this. It's very nice that we can compute this on the lattice so that we can compare it with the holographic prediction. Okay, so this will end my talk. Let me give you a summary. So we start with the lattice Hamiltonian, and our goal is to extract the universal data, including the conformal data, conformal towers, or emergence like super conformal symmetry and the entanglement properties. And what we make use of is the magic product state techniques combined with the low end spectrum. Okay, the magic product state technique is the way that lead to this low end spectrum. And from this low end spectrum, we read off all this universal data. There's a systematic way of how you proceed from the low end spectrum to all this. This will not presume you have any knowledge of the lattice model or the CFT. So this is a potential, this makes our method a potential to tackle a more challenging CFTs, including non-rational CFTs, such as five-state post model, or large central charge, such CFT with larger central charge that you cannot have analytical control. So that completes all my talk.
Thanks a lot, Yijin, for this very nice talk. Are there any questions?
I have a question.
Yeah, please go ahead.
So first off, thanks for this very nice and clear talk. I enjoyed it. So my question is about the first part of the talk where you describe how to construct the lattice versions of the Virasoro operators as Fourier modes of the local Hamiltonian density. So you get really super accurate results, I mean, at least as far as the spectrum is concerned. But can you say something about how sensitive is the accuracy to the choice of the microscopic Hamiltonian? So if I choose another microscopic Hamiltonian within the same universality class, and run this procedure.
Okay, I understand your question. Yeah, so that question is actually a great question. Okay, just let me make use of my whiteboard. Okay, I will write something. So the lattice Hamiltonian is actually not the CFT Hamiltonian, like they are not equal, right? So you cannot really write lattice Hamiltonian equal to CFT Hamiltonian. So that is why the spectrum of the lattice Hamiltonian does not match the spectrum of the CFT Hamiltonian, or either like as you mentioned, like the lattice Virasoro generators does not match the CFT Virasoro generators. And that's, so you cannot draw equal sign here. That's the problem. So what you should really do is that you should add a perturbation, which is the irrelevant perturbation, to this CFT. This is what is really the case, that a lattice Hamiltonian should correspond to a CFT Hamiltonian for some irrelevant perturbations. And these irrelevant perturbations will die off at long distance at large system size, right? So at equal to infinity, at infinite system size, this term shouldn't matter, but at finite system size, this term does matter. And the way it matters is that it will introduce a correction of the order n to the minus delta O minus 2. So this is the correction induced by this irrelevant operator. And this type of correction would occur anywhere in all the extraction of conformal data, like the lattice Virasoro generators and the OP coefficient and so on. So in the case of the IC model, The irrelevant perturbation is this one. This, I mean the blue one, with scaling dimension 4, okay? And then this is also leads to the consequence that when you extrapolate the finite size data, you give 1 over n squared. And what this means is that everything that when you compare it with lattice and the CFT, you get this 1 over n squared correction. This 1 over n squared correction is everywhere. So if your number of spins is small, then all the scaling dimension of this irrelevant perturbation is very small, like the case of delta equal to 2 will give you a logarithmic correction, which is even worse. And if that is the case, then either the lattice with third generators, neither the lattice with third generators or the whole procedure will give you a very accurate result. And that does not restrict to this method only. Like you can try to compute the infinite line correlators on the infinite line, and you can see the same logarithmic or very very large finite size corrections. Yeah. So, so the key point that induced the error is the irrelevant perturbations that that is determined by the lattice model. So in the case of the Ising model, you can show that these delta equal to 4 operators are the only one that is consistent with the symmetries. So below that, you can just not find any that is consistent with the symmetries. And for other models, if you have higher symmetries, and of course this will forbid more relevant operators. Once the symmetry is higher, you find the finite size correction of any of our procedure is smaller. And of course, in the case of Ising model, you may try to do some very boring thing, which is, for example, Hamiltonian goes to Hamiltonian plus partial square sigma. So this is partial square sigma. Okay, you may do this. If you do this on the lattice, then of course the lattice with third generators will change. They will change and they will be worse because you artificially introduce these operators that break breaks the symmetry of the Ising model, and you see a much much worse finite size scaling. So that is the cause of the finite size corrections and how we could possibly avoid make this finite size correction better. Okay.
Oh, thanks.
Okay. Are there any further questions?
Well, Stefan.
Yeah, hi. Matteo, go ahead.
Yeah. So, well, first of all, thanks for the nice talk. I have actually two questions. So one is, how does this method compare with the extraction of the same kind of information out of the entanglement spectrum? Because that's what we are most used to do. So how does it compare?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So here it's based on the energy spectrum, right?
Yes.
Not on the entanglement spectrum, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how do the two methods compare to each other?
Okay. This method, they are not based on the entanglement spectrum. Okay. So TRG, tensor renormalization group, and tensor network renormalization, they are also based on some spectrum. So I will briefly describe how this method would work. So the finite entanglement scaling. Okay, finite entanglement scaling is very simple. That you take a infinite lattice and you measure the correlation functions. But you cannot really simulate an infinite lattice with the matching product state. And that is why you have finite entanglement scaling. By reading off the exponent of the two-point correlation functions, you can read off the exponent and you can divide it by two to get the scaling dimension. That is how finite entanglement scaling works. And of course, reading the exponent is very hard. So this no surprise that this will give you less accurate result. And the tensor renormalization group and tensor network renormalization, they are very similar in the sense that you need to provide a tensor network for the partition function of the classical model, and you just all the partition function of the quantum model, and you just renormalize, make use the real space renormalization group transformation to transform it to a suitable system size that you can use the exact diagonalization to get the spectrum. So in essence, these two methods are also based on the low line spectrum, but in the coarse grain space. The pumps method is also based on spectrum, and this method is also based on spectrum. That is why we can compare it. And the finite entanglement scaling, the reason we include the finite entanglement scaling here is that it is a very convenient method because it only makes use the open boundary MPS, which is a very fast and very mature technique. Of course, like the method are complete, the finite entanglement spectrum, the finite entanglement scaling method is very different from the all the three methods. So you cannot really make a comparison here. But just for practical purpose, this is the most used and most convenient method, so we include it here.
Okay, thanks. And actually, if I may, I shoot the second question, which is out of ignorance and fascination for the last part that you were showing, so the one on holography. So if I look at the final table you were showing, and I didn't know anything, and I didn't know that there was this prediction that you just cite above, I would have said that GCFT is almost compatible with some minor correction to being C, right? Because 0.45 is almost 1/2, 0.72 is almost 0.7, and so on. So is there any way of understanding why it's almost closer to C than to the other prediction, C3 times log 2?
Okay.
Might be so stupid, the question, sorry.
Okay, well, this question is not stupid. Actually, this is the problem that you cannot really, okay, there's not really a established way to compute GCFT for a CFT in a CFT manner. So you do not really know that how GCFT is related to the conformal data of like the scaling dimensions, OP coefficients, central charge of the CFT. So this is the missing of theory. And the fact that you see that they are close to C, it is observations of this selected CFTs which has central charge less or equal to one. You can also our method can also be extended to larger central charge, and we don't know whether GCFT is still close to C in that case. And most probably, if the holographic conjecture is correct, at larger and larger central charge, it will be closer and closer to C over 3 or log 2. But we need to check it. The last point is that if you look at this, this central charge equal to 1 and the holographic prediction says that then G should be the same, right? But then G is different. And the only different thing that between these three theory is the compactification radius. And this compactification radius determines the operator contents and the OP coefficients and so on. So this shows that GCFT, of course, would depend in a very complicated way, presumably on the operator content. So and people do not know how to compute it right now in a CFT manner. So it's very hard to try to write down some equation like GCFT equals to some C plus some delta some function of delta plus some function of OP coefficient, like so on. So it's very hard. So this type of exact calculation is missing. And the reason that it is missing is that this is related to entanglement of purification, and computing a purification in a CFT, in a field theory, you want to get a control of a reduced density matrix of a field theory, that is really very hard. So for those who want to compute this analytically, this would be really a challenge to try to see how GCFT is connected to all the conformal data.
Okay, since we're already quite a bit over time, I think we should stop here. And I would like to thank Yijin again for this really nice talk. If there are further questions, you can always post them on the Slack channel, or there's also the opportunity to have like a discussion or just an informal chat on Remo afterwards. I just posted the link in the chat. So thanks again to all the speakers of the session, and hope to see you tomorrow for the last day of the conference.
Thank you.